it going? Welcome to the Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. It's a Tuesday lift, a little after 3. We had to get the whole family here. We'll tell you who's here in a second. But Michael Harlan Turkel, your host, and I'd just like to start off mentioning that it's New York City's Craft Beer Week. It's right around the corner. It's beginning Friday, September 24th, and running through Sunday, October 3rd. To kick off the annual series, Whole Foods Market Bowery is hosting a beer and food pairing event in their beer room. Oscar Blues is on tap. Chef Jacques Gauthier of Park Slope's Palo Santo is cooking up one of his South American delights to accompany. Food tasting goes from 5 to 7, and beer will continue until 9. With a Craft Beer Week passport, get $3 off a 64-ounce growler fill. Meet Jacques Friday, September 24th, and enjoy some special tastes and tap from the kitchen. I'm telling you, it's a must. Craft Beer Week, check it out. Today's episode is all about family and the art of using family as inspiration to not only have a restaurant, but be able to support a restaurant. Got the whole clan here. I mean, like, the whole clan. The Fajonikongs. King Senior, Annabelle, King's mother. This is going to be a fantastic little discussion. King is a chef owner of Kuma Inn. That's KUMAINN.com in Lower East Side, and Uminom, UMINOM.com. And what area of Brooklyn would you consider that?
Technically, that would be Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
Bed-Stuy. It's on the edge. It's a brinker. It's right behind Pratt, Kloss and G-Stop. They're restaurants that, you know, tie in not only King's technical prowess, but his familiar understanding of food. His parents are Thai, Filipino. Who's who?
Thai.
King Senior is Thai.
And I'm Filipino.
And Filipino. Excellent. King and I met, I don't even know how many years ago. It's kind of a blur. At least 5, maybe even 6 years ago.
Yep.
And first time I went into Kuma Inn, it feels like walking into somebody's apartment. And it's not just because it's on the second floor of what seems like tenement building on the Lower East Side, but also because of its comfort and attention to detail, not necessarily just in the technique of the food, but in accommodating the customer. Now, King, your first, you know, when you open up Kuma Inn, I heard stories about your father sitting outside on a chair and telling people that, oh, my son cooks up there. But when you first open up this idea, why Thai Filipino? You had been classically trained in other restaurants, correct?
Yes. You know, I went to school, culinary school upstate in Hyde Park at CIA, Culinary Institute of America, and did most of my cooking in French houses, Danielle, Jean-Georges, Boulay. But, you know, Kuma Inn, that was my first shot. And at the time, I thought maybe my only shot at opening my own place. You know, there's a couple of reasons. That's why we're on the second floor, you know, to budgetary reasons. You know, and it worked out for both of us, actually. The landlord couldn't rent the space out because it was on the second floor. And it was something that I could afford. It was in my price range. It's a place I opened up with no investors. It was just me. And I wanted to get back to food that I grew up with, food that I was really familiar with, food that I love to eat. It's always going to a restaurant is a great experience, but I always like to think of it too as I always ask myself whenever I go to a place, I ask myself, is this some place I'm going to come back to again? Is this some place that I can eat here maybe twice a week? Can I eat here once every week?
Yeah. If you want to know my answer for that, it's yes, I can come back to it. And yes, sometimes I do eat at it twice a week.
See, that's good. And that's, you know, that's what I thought about with Kuma Inn. And that's why I really wanted to get back to my roots. And I incorporate everything I've learned throughout my whole culinary training. You know, I'm still learning today, which is the great thing about this craft is, you know, you could have some kind of talent, but there's always room to learn more and perfect your skill. And it's great. I mean, and also part of it, too, is I really wanted people to learn about the food. You know, nobody knows about Filipino food.
No.
A lot of people don't even know where the Philippines is. You know, so it's
I thought it was in Queens.
Yeah.
Right? There's that big Woodside community over there. Exactly. I mean, So you grew up in Stuytown, that area that mainly NYU students seem to know. Mm-hmm. During the 80s, even Madonna lived there. But it's that area in the... Would you consider it past the East Village, above the East Village?
It's just above the East Village. It's almost like where Uminom is Bed-Stuy. It's
yeah.
It's like it begins on 14th Street, which is, I don't know, the borderline of the East Village.
Yeah.
And goes up to about 23rd Street.
Now I'm going to talk to your parents for a second, because you have Thai and Filipino influences. When did the both of you, were you born here? When did you come to this country? And why did you guys pick Stuytown?
I came here in 1963 from Thailand, and I met my wife in 1968, and that time she worked for New York Infirmary. She's a nurse.
Yeah.
And we live on the house of the hospital and one little studio. So when he born and we need larger room, so we apply for stipend. But we have to wait for 2 years, and so my wife, she have some connections with the head of the hospital to subsidize for us, so we can get, so when they call us, six of her co-workers also apply.
Excellent.
And we got a nice spot on the corner of 20th Street and 1st Avenue. Right away, my wife, she make a check deposit right away.
they actually still live there
today.
Yeah,
I was about to say, where do you guys live today? Same spot.
Same spot.
Lock it down. Yes. It's all yours. And from the Philippines, were you originally born there and then came to the United States?
Yeah, I was born there and came in 63.
Yeah.
And right away, I worked as a nurse. And that's why the vicinity of Stuyvesant helped, because infirmary is just across Stuyvesant, and I've stayed there since, you know.
Yeah. So when you first moved here too, did you guys cook mainly at home, or were there any restaurants that you would go out to?
Oh, we would go to Philippine restaurants and of course Thai, and I learned how to eat hot Thai spicy food.
Yeah.
And before I never did eat spicy food, but oh, I loved it.
Yeah. And where the Thai restaurants that you ate at?
Yeah, my favorite one is on 14th Street between Avenue B and C. And I know the owner, so when we go there, we don't order for menu. We order something really home cooking.
Yeah.
And they prepare, but they charge me arm and a leg though.
So I'm going there with you next time.
But no more there now.
Oh, no more. No, is Kuma Inn in place of all those restaurants that you used to eat at? I mean, are there any other places in New York that are Thai or Filipino that, you know, ring true to what you used to eat growing up?
Well, my dad likes my friend David's place.
Yeah, David.
David Bank. He has a place called Lan Thai.
Yeah.
And he loves them. So that's because for years we were looking for a replacement for his Thai spot, and it's always difficult.
Yeah. And as far as Filipino food, I know there's a small community in Woodside, and now there's a couple odd Filipino chain restaurants there. But are there any other Filipino restaurants that you eat at in New York?
Not really. It's just along Roosevelt, you know.
Yeah.
And they call it the Turu Turu.
Yeah.
Yeah. We used to have one by our neighborhood, Elvis, but they closed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
growing up in Stuytown too, were there a lot of other Thai and Filipino residents?
There are still a lot of Filipino residents there because of the proximity to all the hospitals.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now, King, growing up in that kind of atmosphere, what did you eat? Did you try to go into the Lower East Side, East Village, and have pizza and all that kind of stuff? Or were you at home?
Oh, yeah. It was a mix of both. You know, I went to a Catholic school growing up for 8 years, Epiphany. And, you know, you can imagine. I mean, most of my classmates, it's Stuyvesant Town's a middle-class area. Most of my classmates, the majority were Irish-American, Italian-American. You know, I was, I guess, the token Asian guy.
I know. How many other kings were there?
Right.
Other than you and your father.
Right. So, you know, I mean, I remember coming home from school. I think I was just telling Annabelle the other day, we'd have a dollar. And with the dollar, we'd get a 25-cent bagel at Essa Bagel. You know, get a soda for 25 cents and play like Space Invaders, two games, you know. And if you didn't want to do that, you could get a slice of pizza for 50 cents. So, yeah, there was a lot of pizza, bagels, you know, as kids. And then when I came home, the more ethnic food. You know, we had rice every day. We had rice for breakfast. When I had friends come over, stay over, they'd love it because it was like totally different food from what they had.
Oh yeah.
And then when I would go to someone else's house, it was the same thing. Like, wow, I don't really eat this at home.
And I don't have meatloaf.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a great experience too. So I was able to learn more about the food. But what I really learned a lot about the food was when in the summertime, my parents sent my brother and I to the Philippines every summer. So it was always kind of like a culture shock because the day school ended, the next day it was pack your bags, you're going to the Philippines. And then 24 hours later, you're in a whole nother country, different food, different people. And it was always a shock for the first week. And then by the time the end of the summer came, you didn't want to go home anymore.
Yeah.
And then again, it was another shock because 24 hours later, you'd be back in New York in a Catholic school uniform walking to school and saying, oh, what's going on here?
You know, sans the Catholic school uniform, that's kind of how I feel at Kumin and Umanam. You know, I transported and then, you don't want to come back from that eating experience. Yeah. I think this is a perfect opportunity to ask Annabelle, who last time you came back from the Philippines was raving about chicken roe, about that experience. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. We wound up going to this area that King used to visit as a child, and I had the best chicken I've ever had in my life. And I've had a lot of chicken, a lot of meat since meeting King, but it really was just the most amazing kind of finger-licking good kind of place. And in fact, people do use their fingers to eat there. They scoop up the rice with their fingers. They use the chicken juice to cook everything. I think it's called Manukan Country, if I'm not mistaken, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's just simple grilled chicken, right? Simple preparation.
It's just simple. You know what makes it so special, though, is that, and we've had this conversation before, is how that everything in the Philippines and that part of the country, that part of the world, is organic, by nature.
Yeah.
Everything's free range, everything's organic. It was killed that morning, and that's what makes that chicken so special there. You know, they're not gargantuan sized pieces of meat. The breast is like really tiny, and but it's so juicy. I mean, you just need to simply just salt it and grill it, and it's an amazing piece of chicken.
See, what's always fascinated me about Kumin is the lack of complexity, the lack of, the wall that a lot of chefs and kitchens put up, that they don't tell you what they're doing or how they do it. Everything's very exposed, not just because it's a tiny little restaurant and you walk in and you see everyone cooking right in front of you, and from almost every angle in the restaurant can you see the fire twirling. But simple dishes, and some of my favorite dishes in New York, Chinese sausage with sticky rice, calamansi lime, chili sauce, blow me away every time. And I mean, I look at it and I know these ingredients and I'm like, oh, I could do it, but I want King to do that for me. Pretty much every dish has that simplicity. And do you feel like it's both embedded in Thai and Filipino cooking, the simplicity, straightforwardness, or what did you do to make Kumin, make Umanam different?
It's I guess it's a little bit of both of what you're saying. It's actually been a learning process for me too, because with food, it's something you can make it as complex as you want, or again as simple as you want, almost with anything in life. And to me, I really believe, and I think most chefs agree too, that you really want just the natural flavor of that protein or vegetable to just come out, and the least you do to it. I mean, I'm learning as I'm getting more and more into it. The least you do to it, the better. So the true flavors come out. There's no need to mask it in varying degrees of sauces or marinades. But again, I mean, those help. But at the same time, you want to keep it as simple as you can. And a lot of the dishes that we do from Thailand and the Philippines, a lot of it, you have to remember, a lot of these recipes come from a place where, at the time when they were made, they were used to preserve the food, like that beef tapa dish we do.
I dream of beef tapa. Beef tapa is King's version of beef jerky, which just, I'm telling you, I'm daydreaming of it right now.
but a dish like that was, something made, I mean, it tastes great, and it's also made out of necessity to preserve the meat. The chicken wing adobo we do in Kumin, same thing. That was something where people who worked on ships, there was no way to preserve food. There was no refrigeration. So they figured out by putting tons and tons of vinegar in there, you'll be okay.
You know?
So, and that's why you get sourness is a big element in flavor on the Filipino side, where a lot of other cuisine, sour doesn't come out a lot, but sour and tanginess is something that you look for in Filipino cuisine.
Yeah, talk about true sustainable cooking. Growing up, were you cooking a lot of traditional Filipino things just to preserve them, to make sure that, you know, you buy a lot of stuff, you'd cook it, but you make sure the other stuff didn't go bad? Or were you just cooking fresh all the time?
It's fresh, but like we have tapa because I have two growing boys, and when they're hungry, all they do is get the tapa and fry it.
Yeah.
So same thing with the sausages, you know, we make, we marinate it in vinegar, you know, and that's it when they're hungry.
Yeah.
It's easy.
So, you know, I think, well, when I go to the green market, you get a whole bunch of fresh vegetables, but they're perishable. What was your kitchen like growing up? Was there a lot of food always to pick from? And if so, what kind of food was it?
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, aside from the tapas, we have achara, you know, that's the pickles.
Oh, yeah.
So we always have that, you know, and we have fresh vegetables because we usually, the Filipino cooking, the meat is there with vegetables and that's it, you know. One dish with everything in it, you know.
But back then, you know, the green market wasn't a big thing. It was mostly shopping in Chinatown.
Yeah.
That's where we go, right? Yeah.
We'd always be, we'd go there on Sundays or during the week, shop and or eat dinner and then shop or shop and eat dinner. So that was kind of a big thing.
Yeah, excellent. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back talking about the new idea of Locavore King sourcing from not just his roots in Stuytown, but Chinatown. Talk a little bit more about some dishes his family made, meeting Annabelle and her influences on King. Oh, I saw that face, and now she's laughing. But we'll be right back. You can listen to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.com. See you in a sec. Welcome back to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network, taping in the backyard studios of Roberta Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Just wanted to say hello. It's a real family affair. We have King's brother, Paul, on the line. Hey, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
Fantastic. Where are you calling from?
San Francisco.
Excellent. I'll be out there in a couple weeks. Maybe you have to tell me where to eat in that part of the world.
I heard you guys talking about Thai restaurant. I discovered a good one just this weekend.
Excellent, excellent. Hopefully, we hear you're on lunch break too, so hopefully we're making you a little hungry.
Yeah, you are.
Excellent. Well, first question, and I've been asked a lot of people after saying, oh, I'm having King on and his brother Paul. How did you get the name Paul and he get the name King?
You could ask my mom who's sitting there, but I'm actually named after her oldest brother.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, firstborn gets the junior.
Excellent.
And then I got my my mother's oldest brother.
Fanta. It wasn't like any option of being prince or duke or earl or anything of royalty.
It would have been cool growing up with that name, but no.
Excellent. Well, we're actually going to start talking about sourcing in Chinatown because a lot of people use the Green Market and that as their place to shop and get ingredients for not just home but restaurants nowadays. And you guys all grew up eating in Chinatown. Do you remember some of the places you used to eat at and what you used to have?
Yeah, there was a place on Mott Street we used to go to. 13 Mott Street, right, Dad? Uh-huh. It was Sun La Ki. What do we used to order there?
Oh, when Sun Mi walk in, the man, I don't know, he's the owner, the manager, he always, okay, half chicken, fried chicken, and what else? If Paul with that, we have a razor clam.
Razor clam,
yeah.
When walk in, oh, fried chicken.
Yeah, the chow fun.
A bit of chow fun.
Yeah.
Right away, soon we walk in.
This is all one meal. This is a whole bunch of stuff.
But after that, we order some more different dishes to come in, crabs. Like a vegetables and all that stuff.
Yeah, the Cantonese style crab with a black bean sauce.
Black bean sauce.
They know what, but Paul and King, when they were still
regulars.
Young, we are regular customers. They know right away, we walk in, right away, they know what we want. And after that, when the restaurant caught fire, and they moved to Flushing.
Yeah.
And somehow they closed, right? They closed the Flushing.
Yeah, something happened. I'm not sure, but they, now they're closed. But they were on like a 30-year run.
Yeah.
Wow. But that's when King and Paul grew up in the Chinatown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paul, what were some of the other restaurants that you remember and you used to eat at?
I don't know, down in Chinatown, I mean, that was the main one. That was just, you know, it was like Cheers. You just walk in, they know what you want, you sit down there, and, you know, if someone else not inside the family sat down and said, wow, this is enough food for like eight people.
Yeah.
There's only four of us.
Yeah.
You know? there was about like eight dishes, you know, and more on tap if we were still hungry after the first 20 minutes, though.
So, I mean...
Other restaurants, I think, you know, I mean... As my brother and I got older, we discovered the other, you know, I've taken my mom and dad to the Singapore Malaysian place. So there's places closer to I guess that's off the Bowery, that have, you know, different flavors. They do the Hainan chicken rice where they cook the rice in the broth. It's basically just steamed chicken, or on a hot day you can get ices there. So I mean. And then I guess even more recent, we've obviously discovered pho.
Yeah.
Which is you know, now when we go there, we usually go for something like that.
Excellent. So expanding your horizons just outside of Thai Filipino cuisine.
Right. Well, those places aren't down there. So you know, like you guys were talking about, they're in Queens or New Jersey or somewhere else.
So it was. I thought it was interesting that you mentioned that, you know, you guys would order eight or so dishes for four people, and that seemed like a lot. But the format of Kuma Inn and Umanam actually are similar to that idea, because I wouldn't say it would be stayed having a single dish all the time, but you get to share and have a whole bunch of different flavors. Is that kind of how you were eating back then, or was it just purely sustenance and you guys were hungry?
No, I think everybody was, you know, you want different flavors when you're eating.
Yeah.
It's a family style meal all the time when we sit down. It's not usually just one dish. There's always a couple of dishes or more, even at home.
Yeah. And so try to explain to people a little bit about the style of menu at Kuma Inn, not just the Thai Filipino, but the tasting portions.
Yeah. The, you know, when we opened up, Wow, it's almost 8 years now that we've opened up.
Congrats.
Thanks. And when we first opened up, it was something, since I knew a lot of people weren't familiar with the cuisine, I wanted them to kind of sample and have different ideas of what the dishes are like. So, you know, I call them small plates, but some plates are a lot bigger than other plates. You know, when you say small plates, I mean, yeah, they're almost appetizer size, but there's some dishes where you could get and order one or two and it could be a full meal, like the sausage plate, right? That comes with sticky rice and the sauce.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could have three or four. So.
Right. I mean, people fight over it now. When they first come in, they order one, but now we have regulars who come in, and if it's a table for four, each one orders their own. Yeah. They're like, that's mine. But yeah, I just wanted people to sample the different dishes, and if you like something, you could order it again or try something else. But the way we eat our food, usually it's rice is kind of our main, like the background for everything, and then everything else you eat with that rice, you know.
Yeah. And so, at Kuma, you serve three different types of rice, if I'm correct, or maybe more than that?
Yeah, a little bit more, I think. We have, well, I mean, three main ones, like, yeah, just the long grain rice, sticky rice, coconut rice, but then we have different types of fried rice.
Garlic rice.
Fried rice, yeah, that's the very Filipino one, the garlic fried rice, and then the sticky rice is on the Thai side.
Yeah.
Know? So you have a little bit of both.
So, of your parents, what are your favorite dishes at Kuma and Uminam? Does Filipino go for Filipino? Does Thai go for Thai? Or do you guys kind of pick and choose?
We pick and choose.
Yeah.
And we usually ask for the special of the day.
Yeah. Excellent. And King?
Mostly we go there. We don't look at the menu. We just tell him, say, please say that whatever you think is good.
Excellent. And of these flavors, like calamansi is a kind of lime that comes from the Philippines, yes? Mm-hmm. That a lot of people don't know. It's strong, acidic, but very floral flavor at the same time. What were some of the other ingredients that you tried to introduce that?
Oh, on the menu, calamansi, we're working with also different types of, some more Thai ingredients like kaffir lime leaves and different types of curry and coconut milk. We work with that. Also, like I said, in the Philippines, we use a lot of sourness in the food. So to bring that out, tamarind.
Yeah.
Working with tamarind paste with fresh tamarind. And also chilies. That's from the Thai side. You know, in the Philippines, the heat, spiciness is not such a big thing. Maybe in one part, you know, one of the smaller islands it is. But overall, it's not something you relate to Filipino food. But something like when you think about Thai food, you do think about chilies and heat.
Yeah.
And so we're again working with different chilies and the different degrees of spiciness.
And Paul, I'm going to assume that you've eaten at Kumin or Uminam.
Yes, I've been to both.
Now, how does it differ from your parents' cooking?
Well, I mean, it's obviously besides the portions, it's plated and. It looks much nicer than when you cook a portion for a big family.
He's only saying this because he's on the phone and not here, so he can't get scolded.
But that's, you know, I mean, I think, you know, I think he has, you know, I think one thing that our parents really instilled is like, you know, I think growing up, we know what good food tastes like. So the tastes are very familiar. And that, I think that's the most important thing. I mean, how it looks is nice for presentation and stuff like that. But I mean, you know, it doesn't differ because the tastes are familiar. Whether it's, you know, back home we would use, I don't know, maybe a breast maybe like dark meat, or maybe now they use, you know, a breast or something. It's difficult. It's a different kind of source of fat, but I think, you know, the taste is the same and it's always consistent. So that's kind of reminds me of what we had growing up.
Yeah. And Annabelle, is this anything like your upbringing? I mean, you're a Crown Heights girl, right?
Actually, Washington.
Washington Heights. Yeah.
No, could not be more different than how I grew up.
Yeah. What was the first dish that you had of King's that opened you to this world?
It was the Chinese sausage.
Oh yeah.
And after that, I was hooked.
It's the gateway dish. Watch out, because if you have it, you're not coming back.
Yeah. I like to joke that's how he got me.
Yeah.
That's how he got me.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. And I want to go back to sourcing in Chinatown, because you guys talk about eating in Chinatown, but King also derives a lot of his ingredients. When
Edible Brooklyn about 3 years ago. We did a story with King about literally sourcing some of these things, from noodles to greens to fish. And like farmers in green markets dealing with chefs, he walks into a shop and they know his name. They know what he wants. Quantity. They haggle a little in price. But it is familiar. It is, you know, him sustainably supporting a local community. So really redefining the idea of a local vore, in a sense. What are some of the places and ingredients that you get and shop for in Chinatown?
Yes, I would say, I guess I spend a lot of time in Chinatown, mostly around Grand Street, up and down Grand, from like around Christie and Bowery. There's a lot of great shops where you could source a lot of items. I remember, I think we went to the woman who makes the fresh noodles.
Oh yeah,
we get the fresh noodles from her. So I use those for both restaurants. They make the noodles there daily, a few times a day.
And that's on the corner of...
That's on the corner of Grand and Bowery.
Yeah, on the east side, right?
On the east side,
because you got to watch out. There's a garage on the west side, too, but...
That's right. It's on the east side. And we use that for Uminom. We use the rice noodles there for our patsu dish, our chicken patsu. And then for Kuma, she makes the... we use those rolled rice noodles, the rice crepes.
Yeah.
With the Kuma Bolognese.
Oh, it's delicious.
So we visit her quite often. And then on the other corner, we have the seafood market, Hai Sen Seafood, it's called.
Yeah.
And they're Vietnamese Chinese family that runs that. And they have great seafood. I mean, I've been buying stuff from them for like 10 years. And, you know, they'll hold things that I need. They know what I need on the item. If they have something new and special that they know they think I'll like, they'll hold on to it for me, and I could come check it out. If I like it, I'll take it. If not, you know, I don't. But yeah, there's great seafood there. Even the butcher there is great. They have a lot of they get a lot of we use a lot of pork, so they get a lot of pork product in there, whole pigs, and we can have them broken down for us. And while we place our orders in and waiting for everything to come out, we'll go hit up a few restaurants there. You know, we've gone to Pho Grand.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So to have some pho over there. And where else do we go around there? There's a great the Vietnamese sandwich shop, the Banh Mi place.
Which just recently moved.
They just moved, yeah. Right? They used to be on Mott Street behind a jewelry store.
Yeah, this was Banh Mi Saigon, and right, with all the jade jewelry up front and the people making the sandwiches in the back.
And I think it's still Banh Mi Saigon, but now they're on Grand Street now, across the street from Ferrara's Bakery.
Oh, really?
Yeah, huh. They're right across the street. But you have to look closely, because again, it's behind a jewelry store.
Yeah, and you don't understand. This is like a foot-long hoagie of pork, what, three ways. You get pate, ground, and... like a char, you know, pickled vegetables, cilantro, on what is kind of a French baguette with mayonnaise. It's the most addictive, beautiful sandwich. And it's what, usually like under $5?
Yeah, $3.75.
Yeah.
We just grabbed a few over the weekend. I mean, it's like at least once a week, you know, once every 2 weeks, I'll grab some and bring them to the restaurant. You know. That's a great place. There's another good Vietnamese-style place on Christie. That makes, I think, some of the best roast pork you could find here in the city. The Chinese style roast pork, the char siu. That place is called, what's the name of that place? I can't remember the name. Na Trang.
Yeah, something. And I think you also took me to that Malaysian beef jerky place, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, they have great jerky over there, too.
But
I mean, there's so many great spots. You know, if you have the time to go to, it's great. But I could definitely see how it can be intimidating for someone who hasn't been down there before, and you know, language is not a, you know, people speak so many different languages down there.
Yeah.
So it could be hard to navigate, but if you you know, find the right spot and know what you're looking for, you'll find the
I actually
right
think
thing.
We did a map of it in Edible Brooklyn too.
Yes.
I forget what issue, maybe like the third issue, but yeah, just search for Kang Kumin on Edible Brooklyn, and there's a great, you know, two-page spread map that also gives you some keywords to be able to ask for certain ingredients. Right. And now, growing up too, did you shop at these purveyors, these, you know, fishmongers and vegetable stands and rice noodle places?
Oh yes, because the Chinese vegetables, you don't see them in the regular grocery stores.
Yeah.
So we go there, and fresh fish, we also go there, and certain kind of meat, So
yeah,
we go to Chinatown.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's funny because I don't know. I know I had this preconcept about Chinatown versus the Green Market as not necessarily being as local, as green, as fresh, because everything's sitting out in stalls, but. Really, they had that idea prior to the Green Market. Mm-hmm. Nothing against the Green Market because I do right. frequent it, but putting that caveat in there.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's true. It's definitely some of the freshest ingredients you can find.
Yeah, you know? And you're supporting local businesses. It's mm-hmm. not like everything's being shipped overseas.
Right.
A lot of the greens, a lot of the fish even, are caught locally and then mm-hmm. brought in and broken down. It's a fantastic place to shop for food to cook, aside from just eating. Now, Paul, being in San Francisco, do you eat in a similar style as you did here, or have you changed your diet a little bit?
I married a Hindu vegetarian, so eating in the same style is almost near to impossible.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that being from.
But you know, I would say that you know, when it's my turn to cook in the house, I have a 2.5-year-old. You know, I will make, you know, she eats adobo. She eats, you know, my daughter and I will eat.
Yeah.
And my wife doesn't. But you know, I'll usually cook two dishes, something that's vegetarian for her and something that's meat for us. And you know, and I still, you know, I cook adobo. I make tamarind stews. I still cook in the same way. But you know, it's only cooking for one, so it's kind of, it's almost like what, you know, a small plate like an Umino, because I don't make that much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I see this as a great concept restaurant. Why not Thai, Filipino, Hindu, vegetarian? I mean, just...
well, there's a, you know, it's funny because it's not unique. We have a couple of friends who are, you know, we have dinner parties, and it's like, you know, I'm married to veg. And
yeah.
So there's like three couples where one of them is a vegetarian and one is not, and we get together, and that way there's like six dishes that will fit everything. But yeah, I mean, I do still cook like that. It's kind of ingrained in the way I cook, but you know, I'm actually a little healthier now.
Yeah. I mean, but that's also the wonderful thing about, you know, not just marriage in the wedded sense, but marriage of culture and cuisine, is that all these new ideas and, you know, new dishes come about. Annabelle, has your background ever influenced King's cooking? Are there ingredients that aren't just Thai Filipino, but have a little bit of Washington Heights in them?
I'd like to think so. Yeah. I mean, in some small way, maybe. He certainly influenced me more than I've influenced him, but we've certainly had a lot of good meals in Washington Heights.
Yeah, plus for one of the restaurants I opened up, Tale. That was a Thai and Latin food that we put together. So it had a lot of influence from dishes I had that her mom has cooked and that we've had in Dominican Republic and that we've had uptown.
Yeah, and we eat a lot of rice.
Yeah,
there's some similarities, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
We're from the Dominican Republic, so rice is basically with every meal. So King appreciates that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's just great to see that, you know, it's not just a melting pot, it's not just a stew, it's not just muddied cuisine, but it is of roots, of heritage, of legacy that create such wonderful, not just dishes, but, you know, stories and a pleasurable place mm-hmm. to eat. Now, are there new exciting things happening with Kuma and Umanam? May it be dishes, may it be concepts?
Well, you know, dishes are always happening. You know, we're always using, we're always making specials, daily specials, and trying out new dishes with the staff and trying new dishes with our friends coming in. We're working on a cookbook right now, Kuma Inn.
I've heard of that, yeah.
Yes. You know, Michael has helped me out with the photography part on that, and we're trying to sell that, so that's still in the works. Hopefully someone's going to pick that up soon.
Well, we're trying to get sponsored to go to Chicken Row in the Philippines,
that's
really.
Right. So. And do a book on that. Right, in Uminom, we serve balut over there, which is that duck egg in its embryonic stage.
Wait, can we slow down and can you back up and explain that to everybody again? Because I don't know if many people have eaten balut, other than maybe Anthony Bourdain
right.
on his television show.
Adventurous.
Yeah.
Yes, the balut, it's really big in the Philippines. It's a like a street food or even something you eat when you're drinking beers or something. And it's a it's usually from a duck, and it's the egg that goes beyond the yolk and white part. It's a little bit more mature. Duck eggs usually hatch around 28 days. And balut, they sell anywhere from 12 to up to 18 to 20 days. The ones we have at the restaurant are 14 days. So when you we boil them, and then when you crack them, crack the egg open, yeah, the shell open, there's a fetus in there. So depending on how mature that fetus is, that's how much it's developed.
Yeah.
So the ones we have at Umi are about, they don't have any feathers on them yet. Bones aren't really too formed yet, so they're not too crunchy. But, I mean, you could see the eyes, yeah, the beak, the head.
Now, whose background does this come from? Is this Thai? Is this Filipino? I see King Senior pointing over to King's mother. Yeah. So, and you ate a lot of balut growing up?
Yes. Not a lot. But when he learned how to eat it, oh, he can sit and eat a dozen.
Yeah.
That's not recommended, though.
Yeah.
I get sick the next day.
Not to say that they aren't delicious, though.
They're, oh, yeah. No, I'm just saying a dozen, you know.
Yeah.
One or two is okay, but not a dozen.
Oh, yeah. I've seen Cool Hand Luke, and, you know, I know not to sit there and gorge on those huevos. So.
But one thing I can tell you, both of my boys, both of Paul and King, they know how to eat good food.
Yeah.
They're very, very...
Not only do they know how to eat good food, yes, but they know how to have people eat good food.
Right.
That's what I appreciate about having met King and had his cuisine and now family shared with me. So, yes, a big thank you to all of you for being here. Any last words? Anything to, you know, poke fun at King, maybe? You know, here's your chance, a whole bunch of listeners. So, no, nothing. Nothing but good graces. Oh, Annabelle's taking the mic.
I think more people should really get out there and experience Filipino food. I think in terms of Asian food, it's still not as probably well known. And having known absolutely nothing about it before meeting King, I have to say I really love it. And it's right up there with my favorites, you know, from in terms of Asian cuisine. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of strange. It's one of those Asian cuisines that hasn't really taken off, you know. Like when we were kids, you know, Thai cuisine wasn't really big, but now you see a Thai everywhere, restaurant at every corner, Thai and takeout.
I see American places do their riffs on pad Thai. I mean,
right. That's on a regular menu now. You go in the supermarket and buy pad Thai mix.
Yeah.
But Filipino food is still something that hasn't taken off, and I'm not sure quite why. It's great food, great ingredients, you know, a lot of Spanish influence, Malay, Chinese.
Yeah.
So there's, I think, a little bit of something for everyone, but for some reason, it just hasn't clicked. And
yeah. Well, what is the pad Thai of Filipino food? Is it pancit pichon?
Pancit. Yeah. Pancit bihon. Yeah, the noodle dishes are. Yeah, that's pretty much kind of like the pad Thai. Yes.
Yeah. So, what are other staples of Filipino food that you hope proliferate other menus?
Well, you know, like adobo. Adobo is a big thing, which has proliferated. I've seen it.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked at other restaurants and kind of brought that in specials and non-Filipino restaurants.
Yeah.
And I know there's a few restaurants that still have that on their menu. So it's something that's great. And I know everybody, I haven't met one person who's tried it and said like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah.
Everybody loves adobo.
Well, I mean, maybe Paul's wife might stay away from it. But.
Right. But, you know, and we're always trying at the between the two restaurants, we're trying to use different different main ingredients with the adobo, you know. So we have like a chicken adobo, we've done duck adobo, we've done squid adobo, pork belly adobo, you know.
Yeah. And adobo is a mixture of what?
Adobo, the main things in adobo are vinegar, garlic, and soy sauce.
Yeah.
So basically, if you take any type of main protein and braise it with those ingredients, it's classically an adobo.
Yeah. Any other dishes aside from those?
You know, if you think of like a Filipino party, lechon is one that comes to mind, which is the whole roasted pig.
Yeah.
You know, and if we can't do the whole roasted one, we'll do parts of it. So at Kuma, we'll do the pork belly, the deep fried pork belly, or at Uminom we'll do the ears and snout. We do a saute of ears and snout with the Thai chilies. You think of spring rolls, like we call them lumpia, those little pork spring rolls. Those are very popular. But then also with the garlic fried rice, which we spoke about earlier, tapa, the beef tapa,
yeah,
which you like is very big. And that's a very classic also if you talk about a Filipino breakfast or lunch, which we're trying to push at Uminom.
Oh, yeah. If you've not had Filipino brunch, it is something wondrous. Mm-hmm. Because what is it? The garlic rice?
The garlic rice.
Well, I go for the garlic rice, beef tapa, and fried egg.
Fried egg's right. So they call that tapsilog, which is a mixture of the three ingredients in there. So tapa, you take the... Tapa is that beef, so you take tap. And itlog is egg, so that's the log at the end. And in the middle, it's sinigag, which is garlic fried rice.
Yeah.
So it's tapsilog. You know, so you could do hot silog, so that's like hot dogs, eggs, and rice. You know.
What is the mackerel that you do?
We do maksilog, so that's the mackerel. We do we use a Japanese mackerel and grill it, a whole mackerel. We also have, what's the other one we have? We have the longsilog, which is the longanisa, the sausage.
Oh, yeah.
Sausages.
Yeah. So it's great. And again, that's another one. When people come in, they don't know what to order because we also have burgers on the menu and salads. And then people look at that. They're like, should we try this? I'm like, yeah, please, you know, try it. And they love it. People go crazy.
See, I want to end the show, though, with a halo halo. Because Megan and I came into Uminom one day and had a beautiful brunch. And King comes out with this little concoction. Tell us a little about it.
Oh, yeah. I think when you came by, we just had... I got this brand new ice machine. And basically, halo halo, it means mix. That's what it literally translates to. But it's a shaved ice dessert. So we shaved ice and we put different types of condiments on top. Sweet beans, purple yam, pineapple gelatin, coconut gelatin, a scoop of ice cream, toasted coconut ice cream, and some toasted rice and a little powdered sugar and some milk. And you kind of just mix that all up and it's a party in your mouth.
Oh, man. It makes you feel like a kid with your first giant birthday cake, too. I mean, that thing comes in and it is an absolute party in flavors and colors and kindness as well. I just really want to thank all the Fajana Kongs. Paul, thank you so much for calling in. I hope everybody's salivating and now about to go to either Kuma Inn or Uminom for, you know, two out of the next three meals twice a week for the rest of your lives. Thank you, King.
Thanks,
Michael. Parents, thank you. Annabelle.
Thank you.
Like to thank New York City's Craft Beer Week for sponsoring, too. Coming up September 24th, running till October 3rd. Get some more info about that. Drink some beautiful local craft beers. You've been listening to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Michael Harlan-Turkel. Shout out to Jack Inslee, our producer, Nat Wiener, our engineer, and hope to have you back here Tuesday, 3 p.m. Cheers.